This is the NedGroup Investments podcast, where we explore a variety of views and insights that investors care about.
Good morning. My name is Robin Johnson, Head of Investments at NedGroup Investments, and I have the pleasure of talking to Steve Romick, Portfolio Manager on NedGroup Investments Global Flexible Fund. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Rob.
So we've been chatting just now about your extensive career. You've been managing money on the contrarian value strategy for 30 years now. What are the few things that you've learned during that time that would help investors?
Well, I think the biggest factor that I think is important to focus on, you know, historically for me has been the idea of continuous learning. I never got in that time just so drilled down and, you know, into the earth with just one thought and, you know, seeking to maintain that thought regardless. And operating with those kinds of called cement shoes is just doesn't allow you to, you know, to continue to grow as an investor. And the world's changed along the way. There's, you know, just not just different opportunities in different parts of the world and different businesses that have come up, but there's different ways to look at these businesses that, you know, that I hadn't considered, you know, when I was first beginning, you know, 35 years ago.
And how have you managed the transition from an out-and-out value investor to become someone who considers more about the quality of a business rather than just the balance sheet?
Well, I'd say we're still out and out value investors. I mean, I think that, you know, a value investor is to invest with a margin of safety. And that is something that's just in my DNA. I have this aversion to losing money, to having the, you know, drawdowns don't concern me as much in my portfolio, but permanent impairments of capital do. So how does one go about investing in businesses, you know, around the world, across the capital structure, and do so, you know, with and avoiding, you know, permanent impairments of capital. And so we do that just by focusing on this margin of safety. The margin of safety, you know, 35 years ago and 30 years ago was really more a function of where the balance sheet, you know, was the offered the protection, having the protection of its assets, whether, you know, be real estate on its books or, you know, a company's trading below book value and it's a, you know, there's lots of inventory receivables and other things. And it was less about what the future earnings of the business, you know, might be. And what I realized over time was so many of these businesses that were very, very cheap 3 decades ago were the businesses that got disintermediated, disrupted by other new entrants, you know, beginning 20 years ago and change. And that forced me to, again, going back to that first part of the question you had asked about continuous learning, focused me on trying to understand how the world was changing, how I can go and continue to be successful prospectively as I had been in the past. And it meant, you know, really to understand these higher quality businesses that exist around the globe and invest in those.
There's a lot of volatility at the moment, and whether you're holding quality companies or not, your share price moves are quite high. But what investors need to be cognizant of right now? What's keeping you up at night? What's on your mind?
There isn't any one thing that's keeping me awake at night, you know, with respect to the equity markets. So the equity markets are not particularly cheap. I wouldn't argue that they're particularly expensive either. There's pockets of opportunity, you know, around the globe and in different regions and different industries, different companies. But I guess the bigger factor for me that really is concerning is just the leverage that exists in the system. Leverage at the sovereign level, leverage at the corporate level. You know, companies, many, many highly levered companies, you know, today. And how they deal with that leverage prospectively is, I think, going to be quite the challenge. Some of these companies have floating rate debt, rates are higher. How are they going to manage through that higher rates, that interest expense bolus that moves through the system is a challenge. And then also how they will, you know, some of these companies may have fixed rate debt, but they have loans coming due in the next couple of years. And that's, you know, a problem as well. And, you know, for many of these businesses trying to get that refinancing, what rate will they refinance? So I think we're going to see some restructurings along the way, and that should create some further opportunity, you know, to commit capital.
Does this higher debt burden have an impact on corporates on their earnings, their ability to continue to earn? Is there going to be margin pressure?
For corporate bonds, you mean?
No, for corporate entities, companies in general.
Well, I mean, sure. But I mean, most of the corporations we own in our portfolio, you know, are businesses that are not highly levered. And so our portfolio isn't going to be as impacted by them. I was talking about corporate bonds in general, and many of those companies are actually private businesses. and, you know, that, you know, taken private by some equity sponsor from LBO firm.
Right. I was kind of getting at the fact that companies are having to spend more, not just on debt, but on things like employee costs, tech costs, innovation. It's harder for companies to earn the same amount of money if they're having to spend more. Are you seeing that across the portfolio or in companies that you're analyzing?
I mean, yes and no. I think the question is a very broad question. I think it can be centered in certain industries more than certain companies more than others. So I'm not really sure how to address it because it's a. I think we could have an entire podcast just about around that. I mean, yes, it is hard for businesses to remain relevant, and it requires a certain amount of reinvestment in that business. And some businesses require more reinvestment than others.
Okay, thank you. And lastly, what are the big opportunities, the future innovations or opportunities that you might be digging into at the moment?
You know, for us, I think about future opportunities, I think about the drivers of return in our portfolio. And we always live by this adage that returns are driven not just by what we own, but what we don't own. So we think about where there's real excess still that needs to be worked through the system, which might create future opportunity. And we'll also think about how the world is changing and how we can take advantage of those changes. So an example of the former would be, you know, commercial real estate in the United States and other parts of the world, and in Europe too. We see challenges where people are using office space differently. And a lot of these office buildings are going to be, vacancies are going to rise, or some combination of vacancies rising or rents going down, so the revenues are getting, you know, per square foot, you know, across these buildings in the United States and Europe will not be quite as robust as it had been, you know, at points in time in the past. And it'll be a cycle like everything else, and they'll figure out some alternative use for those buildings. Maybe they'll be converted into apartments, condominiums, et cetera. But I think that will create opportunities for us in the debt side and the equity side. But it also means that we have to be mindful of avoiding some of these opportunities. And we've been pretty good about avoiding them so far. And these businesses have come down a tremendous amount in price, which has caused us to lean in a little bit. We're beginning to buy in some of these companies, to real estate investment trusts, specifically in the United States that we've been buying. But we're far from, you know, fully invested in that sector. We have a lot of room to buy more. Other areas of opportunity, as we think about where the world's going, you know, it's just, again, trying to find some of these higher quality businesses around the world. You know, Heineken's an example of something we have in our portfolio. It's a brand name. There's nothing terribly exciting about it other than the fact that, you know, the family continues to, you know, manage this business, and they're doing a better job and focusing on cost today than more so than they have in the past. And they also are going to cycle through a tremendous amount of high commodity prices that are, you know, have been coming down. That should help, you know, future profitability as well. And then we think about how, you know, things that go through our heads are about how does, not just, we think about artificial intelligence and not just how to invest in directly, but how do you invest in it indirectly? What businesses will be beneficiaries of that? What businesses will get disrupted, you know, by artificial intelligence? And those are the kinds of things that we think about, you know, broadly, which lead us to, you know, individual specific opportunities.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. And your approach to investing has served your clients, investors, well for 30 years on the contrarian value strategy, and our clients in the Global Flexible Fund for the last 10 years. So thank you very much. Keep doing what you're doing. And thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Rob.
Need Group Collective Investments is an authorized collective investments scheme manager in terms of the Collective Investments Schemes Control Act. Need Group Investments does not provide advice on financial products and will only give you factual information. For further details on our funds and to view our terms and conditions, please visit needgroupinvestments.co.za. Need Group Investments. See money differently.